Hello and welcome into another edition of the Rebel Room. I'm Taylor Byrne alongside, as always, Ray Brewer. As we break down everything going on with UNLV right now, predominantly basketball, as this is traditionally a basketball school, currently going through a rough season by UNLV's standards, an average season overall as the team tries to navigate its finish here without leading scorer Rashad Vaughn, who had surgery it was game day last week, Wednesday, and so that was successful. Still no clear timetable on his possible return. The initial report was that maybe he could return for the Mountain West tournament. Personally, I think they should just shut him down, especially a kid like that who has clear NBA aspirations. But we'll see how that develops. UNLV also shorthanded without Dantley Walker, but that one clearly not as impactful. Still, they go on the road most recently to New Mexico, another traditional Mountain West power that is reeling this year. And the Rebels, from the start, really good offensive performance. I think the defense got better as the game went on. And they, come away with a nice victory there. Back-to-back wins at the Pit. New Mexico, I mean, clearly, like I said, they're not what they usually are. This was their sixth straight loss. And then they go – it's very possible that they'll lose out the rest of the year. They go to Boise. They've got Wyoming at home and I think maybe one other road game in there. So a tough year for the Lobos as well. UNLV knows a little bit about that with a lot of close losses. But just your overall takeaway from being able to go to New Mexico and win – I mean, somewhat convincingly. They gave away the big lead in the first half, but they never trailed the rest of the game and ended up, basically a double-digit win there.
Yeah, on the glasses half-full side of the table, road win, which is hard to come by for UNLV.
Only second true road win of the year.
Okay, at New Mexico, typically a tough place to play, and there was a lot of people there.
Yeah, it was pretty close to a sellout.
Yeah, so great job there. Way to go, UNLV. Good improvement. For me, I watched the game on TV. I wasn't there personally like you, but what stood out was how defense created offense a few times.
Yeah,
a lot of block shots by Good Luck, and I think Wood had them. And when those guys who are very long create turnovers to give UNLV a chance to get out in transition, I think they're at their best. Jalon Kendrick, and I know a lot of other people have said and written about this, but I think he's the one true guy on the UNLV roster that gets the run-run-push mentality. He plays with nothing to lose because, quite honestly, he's probably lost everything.
Oh, that's a bit harsh.
It is a bit harsh, but and you hate to use the word, but he was something and now he's nothing of that level.
McDonald's All-American.
He was a McDonald's All-American and now he's closing off strong as a senior.
Yeah, that was one of his best games.
Yes, but I like how he pushes the ball up the court. And then UNLV made some shots to get that lead. And I know oftentimes the shot selection is criticized, and rightfully so, especially when they play a zone and they try to shoot over the zone constantly. But by moving up the court quickly, they were able to get some looks where the players got square into the basket. Even I know that about basketball, and they went in. And if anything, it gives the team some momentum that the seven scholarship players plus – Chuck and Barry went on the road to the Pit, got a W. I don't care if New Mexico's down. That should give Dave Rice and his coaches plenty of ammunition to maybe have the kids feel a little better about themselves.
Certainly, feeling good, and I think your point is something that I felt from early in the game, is that it was defense creating offense. Good Luck Okonobo finished with five blocks, and he could have had a ton more, but he affected New Mexico so much. And Hugh Greenwood said this after the game. I kind of thought this while watching the game, and I don't think I wrote it nearly enough. I sort of slipped it in at the end. I think he probably had the best game out of anybody. He was fourth in scoring, so it didn't stick out as much. But New Mexico had to adjust what it was trying to do offensively because of him.
And he had six or eight early points.
He was really effective. Just a ton of post moves. And look, he's a confident kid. When I talked to him after the game, he said, "I've always had those moves. I've always had that. It's just about showcasing it." Dave Rice, much more factually, points out that it was kind of since the at Reno game. That was his, I think, his best overall game. Arguably, it was this one. I think those two are probably the top ones. But it was since that game that he's really kind of showcased something else offensively. He's had not only just a couple of moves, but he's had some counters. He's been more patient with it, something that we've seen when Chris Wood is really working well inside. He's very patient with the ball. Yeah. You know, he takes it in, kind of takes a couple seconds, dissects, see if there's help coming down. You move left, see what, you know, you're just playing off of the defense as opposed to just going your one way, which is what I feel like Okonobo did a lot early on. So you've seen clear development from him. He had a great game. McCaw, who, you know, I noticed that he was like looking at the crowd a lot from early in the game, just seemed to be pumped up about something. He said it was actually one of the New Mexico reserves, kind of talked some trash or something before the game. He wouldn't say what it was, but it was just sort of a...
I did notice on one of his shots, I thought he was looking at maybe the student section.
Yeah, he's done that. But UNLV, I mean, from the start, they were staring people down. They were talking, which is not something, you know, a team that's fighting to stay above 500. You don't necessarily expect that. They still do have confidence in themselves. That's very clear. And they do have the abilities once, you know, as you pointed out, once you get the defense going first, and Jalon Kendrick has been great in transition, especially. That was something that I wasn't sure that he was going to be able to consistently do, just kind of the decision-making, because I've pointed this out before. Sometimes early in the year, especially, I remember, because he would do it right in front of us at the MAC, he would lead the break, and then he'd set up a purposeful wing three for Chris Wood early in the shot clock, which is exactly the shot you do not want, and you should not have the person handling the ball trying to go to that shot first. So I always was skeptical of his decision-making in that, but he's gotten a lot better with that. Him and Cody, I think, combined for 13 assists and two or three turnovers.
Cody was solid too.
He didn't kill you. Yeah, he took only one shot. He didn't try and do too much with that. He just distributed the ball, kind of got out of the way. And so he was okay.
1,000-point scorer at one point.
Yeah. Sure.
He was.
I know.
Okay.
It's a different fact.
It is a different fact. It is.
He's not at one point.
That's what I'm saying. He's a 1,000-point scorer.
Yeah.
I'm not ripping the kid.
1,000-point scores doesn't mean much in college, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, in this
day, it means you can score, sure. But, I mean, if you stick around for 4 years, a lot of people are 1,000-point scorers.
All right.
I just always, anytime that's like celebrated, I always.
Well, you're
like,
tough on people, man.
Well, no, that's just a milestone that I feel like if I were a player, I'd be like, oh yeah, you know that's cool that I did that. But I've seen some schools like really blow 1,000-point score. It ain't that big a deal.
Well, some schools don't have anything to look up for.
Well, this one does.
Okay.
And has a ton of 1,000-point scorers.
Okay.
So it's not. I mean, it's not like some big milestone. But anyway. Enough negative. It's positive. They just won. But turning around, you know, it's a quick flyback. So we're recording this on Monday. I'm hopping on a plane this afternoon. The team, I think, shortly thereafter, because they practice early this afternoon, is heading to Utah, going to Utah State. And they did beat them the first time around in double overtime, if I remember correctly, thanks largely to the worst foul I've ever seen.
And Cody Doolin making his foul shots.
Yeah.
1,000-point
score. Tried to miss the second one, and it went in. He's just too good of a scorer, Ray. Yeah, he can't miss.
Yes.
And if anybody doesn't remember, David Collette, who is the redshirt freshman big man for Utah State, who is going to be just
really
a terror in this league. He's old, went on a two-year mission, and sat out. So he's basically, if he went into college right away, he would be a senior. And so now he's really only using his first year of eligibility, which is a scary thought for a lot of people. He was dominant, but then off of a missed free throw by Utah State with the clock winding down in a tie game, he intentionally fouled Cody Doolin in the backcourt because he thought that Utah State was trailing. Just a rough ending for that kid, so it's going to be really interesting to see how he comes out. Utah State's been sort of them and Fresno have been kind of competing for like the best of the rest. Basically, there's the top four teams in the league, San Diego State, Boise State, Colorado State, and who am I forgetting?
Wyoming.
And so, you know, you kind of cut it off there, and it's been sort of Fresno and Utah State going back and forth. They've been good at home, too, as I love to mention, Stu Morrill's last year,
yeah,
second to last home game.
They have and they have a nice little home crowd that they get.
Yeah, the Spectrum. This is going to be my second time there. A little disappointed in the crowd overall last year. It was kind of an odd time, and also Utah State was really struggling in its first year in the Mountain West. And so I've heard that the crowds have been a lot better this year, kind of more up to the reputation. And so we'll see kind of how that goes. They're competing for – I mean, same thing, I guess, all the rest of the teams are, which is seeding.
Dave loves to. He coached on his staff
year. He was there for a year. This was last year because it was UNLV's first trip there in a while. I wrote about the bomb, the water bomb.
Yeah, I love that. That was great.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll be sure to send that out again so people can relive it. But, I mean, does the performance at the Pit – give you more confidence going into this? Are you about the same? I mean, I'm having a hard time figuring out. I mean, we just saw the offense shoot 30% at home against Boise State and then go to the Pit and shoot 54%. So I don't know where this team is at.
Yeah, every time I want to, you know, close the book on the season and just say, you know, they're trying to build some momentum or do something positive for next year, they go off and win a game at New Mexico, and then part of me says, and this is the optimist, well, maybe they could piece together four games in 4 days in the Mountain West tournament, even though they haven't won four straight games all year, and keep this thing rolling. Because look,
I think they won four early on.
No, they haven't won four at all. Okay. Yeah, just the sample size of one game kind of gives you some optimism. Well, if they did this Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and maybe San Diego State got upset by somebody, and the seven players somehow had enough stamina, it gives you hope. You know, and especially if they go into Utah State and they win the Utah State game, and then they got San Diego State at home eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, there's opportunity there to be 17-13 or whatever. Is that sounding about right?
I don't know what my math is. I disagree. Because so they are
15-12.
15-12 right now. And so you would say
– win tomorrow, 16-12.
Which I don't think they're going to do.
Optimistic Taylor.
Then Wyoming Saturday.
At home. Again, they arguably should have won the first time.
Yeah, but and we got to see Nance, who has been gone, is supposed to be back Wednesday against Fresno. And so we'll see, A, if he's back, and B, how Wyoming plays with him, because that completely changes that game. Without Nance, I do think that's a game UNLV could and should potentially win. And then you've got San Diego State at home the Tuesday or Wednesday after that,
Wednesday,
and then you wrap up Saturday at San Jose State.
Another win.
So you've got one win for sure. So let's mark that as 16-12. Then you've got these three games in between.
So you're 12-14. You're going to win one of the three.
Could be.
Yeah.
So it'd be kind of 17-14.
Two in the tournament, you'll be 19-15.
And it's also, you know, don't lock them into the –
playing game
because Fresno State, who's six right now, so UNLV is seventh in the league, I feel like right now one game back, I gotta double check this, of Fresno, but Fresno's got a tough finish to the year, a couple tough road games. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they go, you know, kind of like 1-3 around there to close out, so there is opportunity for UNLV, but at the same time I think going to Utah State's gonna be really tough. Wyoming, if they have Nance, is tough. San Diego State, especially now, I mean, Paul Lee, surprisingly, is back. What a weird game they played in San Jose, if anybody didn't see. San Jose State led San Diego State by one at halftime, which that alone is crazy. It was 36-35. San Diego State doesn't score 35 and a half, but they had to just to keep it within one. And then, with 3 minutes left in the second half, San Diego State was close to covering their 21-point spread. So they finally woke up and realized who they were. But that's... for San Diego State, I think the way that they're playing right now, Poli back, Pope has been tremendous. I think that one is much more difficult, even though UNLV tends to play San Diego State close. They tend to play, this year they're playing everybody close.
And so, you would think a home game against San Diego State would draw at least some minor encouragement from the home team.
I would think so, from the crowd and all that. Yeah, so UNLV one game back of Fresno State right now, 6-8. Fresno State is 7-7.
So we're rooting for Wyoming this week.
Well, not the entire week.
Well, against Fresno. Exactly.
Yeah, so there's opportunity, but like, you know, you've been so optimistic, I suppose I'll take the other side. I mean, you and I were just
Yeah. You got to disagree with me, of course.
Yeah. You and I were just talking about this before the show. I mean, look at their wins. A New Mexico team that has lost now 6 in a row. San Jose State, which chalk that up, that's you ought to win that. At Reno, and Reno is, if you throw out San Jose State because they really shouldn't be even considered Division One this year, that's the worst team in the league. So you go to Reno and win. Colette's, big foul. Otherwise, you know, who knows? But they were competitive with Utah State, but they've been competitive.
And they did
They've been competitive all the time.
They did have to rally to get that game to overtime, if you remember. They were down like 4 or 5 with less than a minute to play, right?
Yeah.
In regulation.
And so you got the nice win against Fresno at home. And then
double-digit win.
Yeah. But other than that, what are the ones that you really feel good about?
In league or overall?
In league. In league is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so
it just – when you look at – and you hate to say what if, but you look at all just the dumb close losses. The initial New Mexico game here should have won.
Well, I mean, pretty much every single loss could have potentially been a win. You would never expect them to win all of those, but a couple of them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, credit for the game at New Mexico. Lobos a lot of times kept getting it close, trying to overcome. And UNLV, if they would have gotten into a situation where they fell behind or, you know, became tied again in the last 2 or 3 minutes, then I think you're really concerned and maybe it does go the other way. But they were just able to always at the right time come up with a counter. When Jordan Cornish hit a big three with, I think it was about 5 minutes, 15 seconds left, then it was never closer than a 3-possession game.
That
the,
kid,
the rest of the way.
That kid, I really enjoy his just – He plays with like this chip on his shoulder.
He's hustling, man.
Like he's pissed off at you for some reason, and he's not afraid to take the shot. We talk about looking at this freshman class and spinning it ahead to the future. And when you were talking earlier about good luck, I think a lot of times people say, "Well, Makan Cornish," but imagine when good luck puts on about 15 pounds. Whew. My God,
I just want to see him keep developing on the offense because he's got defense. I mean, he's got good timing with that. I feel like he's gotten better at not biting at fakes so much, and he's he's able to start a lot of offensive transition just by being a presence down there. And so you know it is going to be interesting to see end of the year. Do they all come back? Can they develop? And not just kind of be what they are now, but can you continue to add things? Because then I think you really like what you have. Dwayne Morgan was about the only guy in New Mexico who didn't do much, but even he was I feel like a little better defensively. I don't know. He's having a rough time with it. But again, you always want to gamble on that type of talent, see if he can progress, figure it out, let things slow down for him. So quick jump to recruiting. What's Gorman's current situation in the playoffs? They have one game before going.
No, Gorman last Friday, 3 days ago, won the Sunset Region. We had talked about last week about how Troy Brown.
Oh yeah, it was going to be Centennial Gorman,
and someone
blew that up.
Palo Verde blew it up. Who wasn't even a top 10 team in our preseason poll.
They showed you, Ray.
Troy Brown is great. Top 10 overall player, regardless of classification, in the nation. He has one problem, in that he tries to get his teammates involved. So the first half, Paolo gets a 15-point lead because Troy's passing to teammates who are shooting. If he's, playing for KU.
And he should probably
just take over, be the guy and get your team to the next round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And, so they're down 15 in the fourth. He takes over and they lose by 3. So anyways, Gorman advances. They're in the state semifinals Thursday at the Orleans Arena. Opponent to be determined today.
All right. And the reason I bring that up is just I have, everybody's still, talking about Zimmerman and UNLV and his choices a lot. I have just stuck with my answer the entire time that I don't think he's coming here. Starting to hear some information that maybe that's not the case. Maybe it's already a done deal. We will see. But your gut right now, because it was, talking to him and Lori from back in the summer, back at the beginning of the season, it was always the decision wasn't coming until after the season ends. Now that we're close to that, sort of what's your feeling on his decision making.
I could see where, and this is a possibility. Case Kiefer and I, who works here, we were having a great talk on Friday where, you know, Zim has been the man since he's been a kid. He's been the tallest guy, best player, all the way through to high school. And if he came to UNLV, he'd be the man again. He'd fit into the post rotation. He'd get plenty of reps to get to the next level. But if he went to, like, Kentucky, for example, who's on his list, he wouldn't necessarily be guaranteed to be the man, and he'd have to learn how to fit in with other elite players. And I think that's why UNLV's got a chance, because he's going to have an opportunity to get court time and to showcase his skills to get to the NBA. And that's the family's number one goal. Also,
yeah, because they those guys buying into the rotation in Kentucky is really hurting their NBA chances.
Well, also, sir, the family, as you know, it's close in family. They do a good job of keeping an eye on their children, and they would have to relocate to another town. And, you know, they're recovering from paying that Gorman tuition for 4 years. And who knows if they could do that. That's why I think UNLV makes sense for them as a family.
Yeah, we will see how that develops. I will stick with just because it's what I've always said, that he's going to go elsewhere. But there's obvious reason for optimism. You know, a year ago at this point, I don't think UNLV fans should have been as optimistic. But Ryan Miller coming in has changed a lot of things for multiple reasons. But I do feel like UNLV's very much in that stretch, and so that's something, you know, they're looking for a strong close to this year, try and do what they can in the conference tournament, but it's also clearly eyes towards next year, bringing in Poyser and Jones, and then potentially, you know, Zimmerman or some of the other guys that they've started looking at here, or been looking at as other options. But it'll be interesting to see, because if anyone knows what they're going to get out of this UNLV team every night, please tell me, because I have no idea. You know, it's complete guesswork, and
that's what makes it fun.
It's
absolutely no gauge. You could get the UNLV team that shot 29% against Boise State that had no energy, or you could get the UNLV team that looked like the nation's best team in the first 10 minutes against Colorado State.
You just never know.
You never know.
Never know, Ray. All right.
It's a bag of tricks.
For Ray Brewer, I am Taylor Byrne. We'll talk to you guys next week.
I dream of you amid the flowers for a couple of hours.